We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
The baseball season is go, go, go. It's nonstop, relentless for every night, six straight months, and then hopefully another month in October. You also have work, friends, family, and a million other things going on. That's when you reach for a Coors Light. It's made to chill. There's only one beer out there that's literally made to chill, and that's Coors Light. I mean, the mountains on the bottles and cans even turn blue when your beer is cold. Is there anything better than opening up your refrigerator after a long day, seeing that icy cold Coors Light can or bottle in your fridge? The answer is no, there's nothing better. That's why when it's time to chill, you choose Coors Light. It's mountain cold refreshment made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So that's why when you want to hit reset, reach for a beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. And as always, celebrate.
Where's Judge right now, though?
He's hurt.
We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your hosts, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 477, brought to you today by Indeed.com and Bet Online. Scott, hey.
Positivity.
That was the 2019 Baltimore Orioles that we got at the Bronx this weekend. That was nice.
That was nice. That's exactly what we needed. We needed that team to show up. We needed them to score three runs in the entire series. I like to think that it was because the Yankees had dominant pitching and controlled the bats of this team that, you know, is actually not that bad. When you look among league leaders, you actually see some Orioles sprinkled in there with some of their offensive statistics. So, yeah, I think that the Yankees, you know, like we talked about in the last show, I was showing some optimism, and I believe that optimism is for good reason. I think this team is starting to do something potentially.
Well, I think the reason that it was so frustrating the way the Yankees were playing in September is because it's not like they were playing the top teams in the league. They were playing the Baltimore Orioles, they were playing the Toronto Blue Jays, and they were still losing games. And that's not something you can have happen. Yes, the Orioles are better this year than they were last year. They have young talent, yada, yada, yada. But they're still nowhere in the same league as the Yankees, and the Yankees should be wiping the floor with them. So it was nice to see this weekend. Even though I think the Orioles kind of gave away a couple games this weekend. Like, it could have very easily been a 2-2 split if one or two things don't happen. I mean, how many times are the Orioles going to run into outs?
I mean, here you go,
Yankees. Here's another out in this inning because we don't feel like scoring.
That's fine. It comes around, though, you know, and that's baseball, Susan. That's what happens. That's the law of averages. When you're a bad team, you show that you're a bad team in different ways. So finally, definitely, they did that, and the Yankees, it goes the other way too, is when you see a team that's struggling mightily and, you know, playing to way below their potential, eventually the back of the baseball card stands out and the talent rings true and you start seeing guys play up to their ability. So it's nice to see that. It's nice to see, you know, a couple guys that are going well beyond, you know, the people that have been good this whole time, like Luke Voit. This guy is playing on one foot essentially and talking about it. And the fan base is gravitating more and more and more towards Luke Voit because of these, of the way that he's playing, the way that he's showing that there's a limp and talking about it and still hitting bombs.
Limpin' Luke. So, I mean, it's not hard to figure out. Like, you're a player and you fight through injuries and you still are out there performing, fans are going to gush over
for sure.
Like, that has been in any sport, in any league, in any city, that is an absolute truth.
Yes, that is true.
That will happen.
No doubt about it. And he's performing too. It's not like he's just out there, you know, not performing well and out there to be out there. He's out there performing and hitting, you know, mashing bombs. So, yeah, it's good to see. And beyond that, you got Gleyber back, who's, you know, a key cog. We needed him to go. The Yankees needed at least one or two of their staple guys to turn it back on. Just like, oh, okay, it's been off for a little while. Let's turn it back on so that we can have a little bit of one protection. You know, I've talked about this 1,000 times about Gary Sanchez needing that protection in the lineup. Still believe that's true for him to actually be right. I don't think it's a necessity for him to be right, because I think there's opportunities for him still not to be right when there's protection, but it has to be there for him to be good. And
but he's looking better.
At-bats, I think, are looking better. I feel like he looks more comfortable. He hasn't been catching as much. So I don't know if that has to do with the pitcher. I know we're going to get into all this. I don't know if that has to do with the pitcher. You know, something that
there's been
hints at talking about over around here. But, you know, maybe it's just more of the they want to give him more rest. That's obviously part of Boone's, you know, part of his plan.
You're carrying three catchers, so fine.
Might as well.
And like in Sunday's game, you saw they were able to DH Sanchez. Higgy started, and they were still able to pinch hit for Higgy and then put in Kratz afterwards.
Yeah.
So if you're going to carry three catchers, do that, because otherwise you're just carrying Kratz because he cries in Zoom.
Yeah, that's what he's doing. He's running the leadership programs for all the young guys coming up. Like, it's whatever it is. I don't really care. Again, I've always been to the ilk. Like, I don't care how things happen. As long as they work and they're working, great. That's good. When you go out and you go a little rogue with the way that you approach a game and you don't have the results, then like you deserve to get criticized. This is still a long way away from things right, you know, being completely righting, but there is some good positive things that are happening with this team.
This weekend, a sweep or minimum 3 out of 4 was necessary if the Yankees wanted to have any chance in the playoffs. I don't think you could lose to Baltimore this weekend and then
psychologically
then have an off day on Monday and then be like, okay, we got a 2-week stretch to finish the season. Let's go, boys. Like, you lose to Baltimore and lose your playoff spot temporarily, even if it was temporarily, to the Baltimore Orioles, I don't know how you would have rebounded from that. So this weekend was absolutely necessary for the Yankees to show up. You agree?
No doubt. And, you know, you have to at some point establish your dominance in your division amongst teams that are just trash. And yeah, we've talked about the young talent playing well at Baltimore, and that's great. Good for them. You know, it's about goddamn time that this team has some form of hope in their own building. But you have to take care of that business. When you see the low point for me, and it wasn't even on the field, but rock bottom for me for this whole thing was when Michael Kay was scoreboard watching before the Yankees were going to the Orioles, talking about the Baltimore Orioles. Scoreboard watching for the Orioles, talking about the 8th spot in the playoffs. Like, I was like, what are we doing? How is this a conversation? How is this a talking point in any game ever? And it was. It was a legitimate thing that he said. And maybe he said it for emphasis on like how ridiculous this is. I don't know what his motivations were.
But it was reality.
It was reality in the moment.
It was reality.
When he said it, I was like, holy shit. Wake up, boys. Like, I hope they play
that again.
That's
a reality check moment for the Yankees.
Yeah. So
you got a scoreboard watch the Orioles when you wiped the floor with them last year and they were supposed to be a 100-loss team. If this was a normal season, they were supposed to be.
And for the final spot that after they added two on. You know,
so we had Connor Newcomb on our show to talk about the Orioles. He has the Locked On Orioles podcast. He had me go on his show before this weekend series just to talk about the Yankees. And he said there was an actual conversation in Baltimore. Would the Orioles win 10 games this year? So that was the team that didn't know if they were going to go 10-50 in a 60-game schedule. That was the team you were facing for an eighth spot in the playoffs this year.
I mean, it's kind of...
that was the reality they were in.
If they're having that conversation, it's a little on them, not understanding that they... Because they do have talent. There's talent in that roster.
Some of these guys have either accelerated quicker than they thought or might be like a little bit of last year with the Yankees where they call up guys from the minor leagues and, oh, look, they're actually producing. I didn't expect them to produce at that
level. Even their pitching staff. This has probably been the best pitching staff that they've had since I can remember. I mean, for a really long time.
And they did pitch two good games Saturday and Sunday. The Yankees didn't score in those
games. So, I mean, I will give some credit to the Baltimore Orioles. They have some young guys in there that can play ball. And, you know, I don't think they're going to be a threat in any time period in the near future by any means, but they're much better than they were last year, it seems.
But do you know what's funny? They have a better future right now than the Red Sox.
Yeah, but the Red Sox will just buy their way out of it again. They'll sign a few guys and then be there. Right now the talent's there, but we'll see what happens with that. I mean, we've seen what the Orioles have done, or the Red Sox have done in the past.
But for the Yankees, we'll get into everything that happened this weekend, but just from a bigger picture standpoint, where they are. So they have an off day and then they have a 17-game, I guess you want to call it, sprint for the playoffs. They're going to get some guys back. Aaron Judge is reporting to alternate site this week. Giancarlo Stanton was there this weekend taking at-bats. Gio Urshela is supposed to come back on Tuesday. So Boone said that there's a chance we could have Judge and Stanton back this coming weekend in Boston. That gives them about 10 games of playing time before the playoffs.
Yeah.
Realistically, though, it's 7 because they're going to sit them a few games, right?
Yeah, no, that's true.
So seven,
I think we
seven
said, what,
games.
Two series. I think that was what you asked me this question last time. I said about two series. It seems about right.
And I think even if you want to drill down further, you got to be targeting like 15 to 20 plate appearances for each before the playoffs start.
Yeah, that's fair. They got to get their feet underneath them. They got to see some major league pitching. I think that getting them thrown in for two series should be. I mean, look, they're not gonna. It is what it is. That's seems like a lot of time before you get to a playoff. It seems like an ample amount of time for you to get ready and get some timing down. I don't know. You know, I don't know how much actual work you can get in the alternate site. I love the videos that we're getting from like the grassy knoll. It's like, who is that? Yeah. Connor Foley, I think, has been tweeting them out.
He's up in a tree.
Yeah, he looks like he's climbed a tree with like a periscope, like a telescopic selfie stick or something just to get some footage. But they need to get back and they need to get their timing right. That's the only concern, is that they're going to walk back into much better pitching also when they get into the playoffs. Maybe not for the first two rounds.
Well, exactly. It depends who they face in the first round, because we were kind of worried if the Yankees do get that eighth seed and Tampa secures the one seed, okay, you get Judge and Stanton back, but they're kind of rusty and they're facing the Tampa pitching staff. That's not an ideal situation for a three-game playoff
series. There's a couple non-ideal situations too. I think the Twins present actually as much as we are.
No, shut up.
No, but listen, they score a lot of runs.
You shut your mouth, sir.
The problem is, look, at some point this is going to change, people. We need to understand.
Water always finds its level, and the level is the Yankees beat the Twins.
Okay,
that is what happens.
You know what I feel about the word do, but my thing is, I don't like the matchup per se, because we would have to score some runs to keep up with them. And if they're not going,
they will. But it's actually ironic that's if the Yankees can overtake Toronto, which they're only a half game back now and they have plenty of games left. So you win your games against Toronto, you will secure that number two seed in the American League East, which gives you a better seeding theoretically in the playoffs. But it's ironic, because if the Yankees take over that spot, Toronto spot, and everything else stays the same, they would play the Twins in the first round. It would be out at Minnesota for three games, but they would still play the Twins. So somehow, some way, the Yankees always find the Twins in the first round of the playoffs.
It does. It's like a magnet, man. You cannot get away. I don't love the matchup this year, though, because that they have a really good offensive team.
Didn't we say that last year, though?
Like all the
and
twins,
the other thing about it is that we have
over 100 wins. This is a legit Twins
no,
team.
No, we had some control in that at least. We could chant, we could terrorize them. There's none of that.
Oh yeah,
none of that.
We can't chant at the Uber driver. Yeah, we could just tweet.
We
at
can't
him.
Psychologically get into their heads anymore, and I don't like that. I don't like that one bit. I had a little bit of control. At least it felt like it did.
But I mean, it's kind of silly to project playoff standings at this point because they changed so much. I mean, they changed over the weekend. At the beginning of the weekend, Oakland was in first place, and then they lost Matt Chapman for the season, and they took a little hit, and now they're the three spot. And the White Sox, the young White Sox are the first seed. Tampa's the two seed. I think it's going to change a bunch, but I think what the Yankees need to be focused on, catch Toronto. They're not going to catch Tampa.
Not even catch Toronto. You have these games against Toronto in front of you.
Overtake them.
Beat them.
Yeah, beat them.
Yes.
Beat them.
Win that series.
100%.
Yeah.
Yes. But so the Yankees are four back of Tampa with 13 to play. They're really five back because Tampa owns the tiebreaker. So if they both finish with the same record, Tampa wins the division. So the Yankees need to finish one game up. So they're not going to make up five games in 13 to play against Tampa with none head-to-head. It's just... I don't think it's going to happen. So you've got to be focused on beating Toronto, playing well in your games, and taking that two spot in the division. And while that's not where we thought they would be a month and a half ago,
who cares?
All things considered, you at least have some positivity entering October if that's the case. You agree?
Well, I mean, the one thing we've seen in the past in baseball, when you get to the playoffs, the team hot? With the momentum, yeah, the hot team yeah. is, you know, becomes an odds-on favorite pretty quick just because of the way that baseball has gone. Yeah, you know, I don't know how this year is going to be different, you know, because they're going to be played at different places if they end up getting into, quote, bubble or whatever that looks like. So, I don't know how much momentum carries. Maybe it's just very, very true to what is happening on the field, which could play
yeah, maybe
well.
It gives you a better, yeah. Maybe it gives you a better analysis of maybe. Just team versus team.
Maybe it does. Maybe it does.
So, yeah. And that's the thing. If the Yankees can get to one of the top four seeds, then they at least get to play some home games in the playoffs because Jeff Passan reported over the weekend that the playoff bubble is set. It just needs union approval, even though MLB can just implement it if the union doesn't approve it. And I think baseball is way too worried about some guy getting COVID and then having to delay a playoff series.
They want their money. They want their playoff money. They want this revenue to make sure it clicks.
Yeah, but like you say that, is that even you saying that a negative thing? Like, yeah, everyone wants
their
money.
No, I'm not saying it's a negative thing. I'm saying that's the overwhelming reason why they're doing it. They're trying to control the...
Of course.
They're trying to control the revenue.
Duh.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's also ensures us the best chance at getting postseason baseball.
Right. I'm talking about
your money.
I'm talking about baseball ad revenue for the playoffs to actually yeah. happen. Like that, they have to at this point for this to be, you know, some semblance of a successful season. They have to have the playoffs. Like everybody understands that, and baseball understands yep. that they're monetarily, it's a big deal for them. So yeah, they're going to control every aspect of it as possible. And if the union puts up a fight for this bullshit, it's, you know, it's not going to be, it's going to be a terrible look. They just need to do it because there's, whether you know or you don't think this is true, that them trying to secure the ad revenue dollars for playoff money, it doesn't matter. The other side of it is player safety within a bubble. You can't argue that it's not safer. The union doesn't have much of a leg to stand on.
Look at what the NBA and the NHL have yeah. done. They've had no cases of COVID in their bubble. And it might be more difficult for baseball because they're going to be coming from
bubble to bubble.
No, they're not going to, they're in no bubble right now. They're going rapidly from no bubble to bubble.
Right. But my point is,
so
that
there
you
is
can't
some
just have one bubble
uncertainty.
Either. So you're going to, at some point when you move on in a playoff series, go from bubble to bubble.
Well, you have you have an AL bubble and you have an NL bubble. The AL is in Southern California and the NL is in Texas.
Okay. There you go. So there's going to be a merging of bubbles at some point.
For the World Series, which starts October 20th at Globe Life Field, the Rangers' new park.
There you go. That's nice for the Rangers, right? No fans, though. It's a shame.
And the wild card rounds start for the American League September 29th. And I did some schedule counting. So Boone announced after last night's game that the Toronto series, which starts on Tuesday, is going to go Devi Garcia, Gerrit Cole, Masahiro Tanaka for the pitchers. So that means Gerrit Cole's pitching September 16th. That means he then pitches again on Monday the 21st, mm-hmm. and then pitches again on Saturday the 26th. That does not line him up for the first game of the wild card round.
Okay, so he's going to be bumped at some point, or...
I think what the Yankees are hoping is he makes that start on the 16th and he makes the start on the 21st. Those are both against Toronto. They win both of those games and they win their Toronto games. And then they're in that number, that second spot. And then those last weekend games against Miami do not matter. But if they do matter, Cole's going to have to pitch. And then he does not line up for the playoffs. But that's the situation you have put yourself in by playing like crap for 3 weeks.
I think it also depends on what the situations are on both sides, you know, whether he, if you win or lose, what happens? You know, is one worse than the other? Really? Is one, I mean, it's not, at that point, at that point, you hope it's not for the final spot of the playoffs, right? Like, that's not what we're looking at. But my point is that if you're jockeying for position within the playoff structure, like, does it really matter?
Yeah, it could.
It could matter who you're playing. That's what I'm saying. Like,
yeah,
it depends on what both sides of the situation are. Because even if they lose and they don't play Tampa, then they probably still won't play Cole. Pitch Cole.
What if the situation is you need a win against Miami in order to play the Twins, or you're going to Oakland?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think that's exactly one of those situations. It's pretty difficult to understand which one's worse or which one's better. Because you're going to bubbled situations. You're not going to the home ballpark where there's like a...
No, you are in the home ballpark for the first round.
For the first round, yes, you're right. But there's nobody there. It's going to Oakland. Again, does it matter? Does that matter?
I think it does matter a little
bit.
The
travel? Maybe the travel.
Yeah. You haven't traveled outside of your time zone.
Are they finally going to get pods for like COVID travel? You got to have 6 feet.
They'll probably be in coach. Not even
extra. Just spread out. Everybody gets their own.
Not economy plus, just coach. Elbow to elbow.
Yeah, or maybe they get the coach where, you know, you can't pull up the armrest, so you can't lay down across the seats.
Spirit Airlines.
Those are the
worst. Spirit. I'll never fly Spirit again after I flew back on one of our first Tampa trips when we tried to stay up all night. I flew Spirit at like 6:30 in the morning the next morning.
Yeah, I did that.
Almost died.
I did that and forgot my suitcase in Tampa.
We mentioned Gerrit Cole, and he shoved in the first game against the Orioles. It was the first game of the doubleheader. It was something that the team needed so desperately because he needed to set the tone for the weekend. And setting tone, emotional things, like, those do matter in certain situations. And when you have your $324 million man on the mound in the first game of a series that you need to bury a team to just kick them away, sweep them away. We don't want to deal with you for the playoffs anymore. That's exactly the performance that he needed and the Yankees needed. I don't think that can be overstated.
Especially at the first game of a doubleheader, you know, after the rainout the night before, you know.
Save the bullpen, go the distance, even though complete game, air quotes.
So that's the thing. Like, do they get credit for a complete game at 7? I don't think they do, right?
Nope, it's not a complete game. It wouldn't have been a no-hitter. It wouldn't have been a perfect game. None of that.
So the... Look, everything you said is true, even though I still can't believe that we're saying this against the Orioles. It is what it is. We're here. Sure. But at the same time, like, you're looking at the situation in front of him as well. Like, if he comes out and doesn't pitch well, has the same thing happened last time and gets knocked around, you know, in that fifth or sixth inning or whatever, and the Yankees have to, you know, empty their bullpen, and, you know, a lot of things could go badly, and then all of a sudden you have that second game now too for things to mount on top of. It was a big. Exactly. It was a big game. It was a big set the tone for the day too, because of the two games on the stint. But yeah, so glad he rebounded, man. It was exactly what we needed to see.
114 pitches. That was his high on the season, and his high if you go back all the way to last year. His previous high was 113 in 2019 with Houston. Not previous high, but high since 2019 was 113. I thought it was interesting that Boone put him out there for the seventh after he was already at 100 pitches and the Yankees had a big lead, but I liked it. Cole was dominating, and it was a situation where we saved the bullpen. He's going to go out there. He's going to finish this off, and we're going to save the bullpen. It's not like he was laboring through 100 pitches. He was dominating through 100 pitches.
This is one of those moments where we've been criticizing Boone a lot for the way that he manages in game and like handles situations. And I have a feeling, I didn't listen to the post game, so I don't know if he addressed this, but when you have a guy like Cole who has 100 pitches going, you know, through six innings, has one more to go to finish the game off, that's when you go and you have a conversation with your guy, like, oh, how you feeling? The standard stuff. How you feeling? How's the arm? Location good? Like all these things. And when Gerrit Cole tells you that he's good and wants to finish the game, in that situation, in that moment, setting the tone for the doubleheader, setting the tone for a series that they have to win, understanding that he got knocked around a little bit later in the game in his last start, and he says, yes, I want to finish this one, you say, okay. You say, okay, you don't look at your numbers, you sit your ass on the bench, and you understand that last time has nothing to do with, had nothing to do with, like, you know, him throwing too many pitches to get hurt. Like, these types of guys, that doesn't happen. Something else happens.
No, I mean, there is a limit. You're not going to let him throw 130 pitches.
Of course, but I'm talking about in this situation where he was. He was at 100 pitches. I'm not talking about a situation where there was 115 pitches already thrown. It's 100 pitches. He's got one more to go. You listen to your guy. At that point, you know that the positives far exceed what could happen. And I think in that moment, you're looking at a guy who's trying to show leadership to the rest of the team, the rest of the pitching rotation, and goes out there and just finishes the game. And that's a great moral boost for the guy that you absolutely need at his best for the rest of the season. You can't mess with that. That's a very, very fragile thing. If you sit him down and you're like, I don't believe you, there's a really fine line there.
And let's be clear. Gerrit Cole's the only pitcher on the staff you're sending out in that situation.
Right.
Anyone else at 100 pitches, you're pulling them, which is, I think, the right call.
Sure.
Gerrit Cole, you send him back out there.
Especially, you know, it was 5-0, right?
It was six, heading into the top of the seventh.
Yeah, I mean, even it's you could definitely say six runs even, you know, at that point. Like, Gerrit, sit your ass down. But he didn't. He Gerrit Cole obviously said something to him, or he just didn't even go to him. There was a clear message there, whether it was set or unset, that they knew what was happening. But
I think the situation also was part of this, because say this exact scenario happened on Thursday night and it's a 9-inning game, I think they probably pull him after 6 innings and 100 pitches.
Probably. Yeah, because he's not finishing it at that point.
Right. Exactly. But so I think the situation, finishing the game, played a factor. And let's also be clear, as great of a performance as this was, it's also a lot of pitches for 6 and 7 innings.
It is a lot of pitches.
Ideally, you're not at 114 pitches through 7 innings. You're at 114 pitches through 8 or 9 innings. Because last year, he pitched 8 innings 3 times with the Astros, 101 pitches or less through 8 innings. Yeah. So he's capable of doing
it. Yeah, the efficiency wasn't there. It was a little strange because he was getting swings and misses. So when you look at...
He got 27 total swings and misses, 19% on his fastball, 19%. That's that magic number we talked about last year. 19% swings and misses on the fastball. That's why he didn't give up home runs. That's why he was unhittable. But he also did throw a lot of pitches. Like, both can be true.
That is true. Who caught those 114 pitches?
Interesting question, Scott. That would be one Kyle Higashioka.
So it definitely feels like they're giving pitchers different opportunities to be caught by different guys. It's like they're sprinkling it around.
To be fair, Higgy caught him last time against Baltimore, and he got hit around in the fifth inning.
So he wants to right the ship with Higgy. He wants to finish the job. He wants to see one through with Higgy.
Are you saying there is a Gerrit Cole catcher controversy?
I'm not saying there's a catcher controversy. I'm saying that it's interesting to see that, you know, as soon as I pose that question, is so-and-so part of the problem? There's been a lot of different catchers catching Gerrit Cole. For the first time all season.
Who do you think is going to catch him in his upcoming start on Tuesday?
Probably Gary Sanchez.
Probably that's what I'm leaning to. If it is Higgy again, I think we got a problem.
We got to look to see. I don't think it's a problem, but we have to see. It's not a problem right now. It's definitely not a problem. Whatever gives Gerrit Cole the best opportunity to pitch well, I could care less who's back there between the three of them, honestly. It doesn't matter because the offense doesn't change.
Well, because Gary's not hitting. But what I meant was we have a catcher, personal catcher problem. where I think there is a personal catcher. If Gerrit Cole says to Boone, hey, I really clicked with Higgy in that last start, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, and Higgy's out there to catch him, I think that's a thing at that point. Not a problem. Don't use the word problem. It's a thing if he catches his next start.
Okay. Yeah. That's fine.
I'm calling it right now. It's a thing if he catches his next
start. What if Kratz catches his next start?
No, it's not a thing.
But I would say then that would mean four of the last five starts from Gerrit Cole have been caught either by Higgy or Kratz.
But if you're not going to catch Gary Sanchez, then why wouldn't it be Higgy at that point, you know?
Because Kratz is an offensive juggernaut.
Oh, right. So, you asked a very important question. Who caught Gerrit Cole? I think an equally important question is, was that complete game seven inning shutout his signature Yankee moment? Or did he earn his pinstripes? Ugh,
come on. You cannot be calling the signature Yankee moment.
Don't fall for the joke, Scott. Don't
earn your pinstripe. People are falling for it. I saw this on Twitter. There were some people. There are people falling for this crap.
They fall for it every time.
It's the Yankees versus the Orioles on September 14th. Yeah, situations are different. There was more at stake. He just did his job is what he did.
Exactly. That's what Gerrit Cole's supposed to
do. You can't have a moment or earn your pinstripes either. When there's a stadium that's completely empty.
that's a thing that we talked about at the beginning of the season. Like Gerrit Cole's going to kind of have two first seasons with the Yankees.
Hopefully, you know, as long as
it's either going to come in 2021 or 2022.
At some point it's going to come, right?
Do you think we get to go to a Gerrit Cole game in this 9-year contract?
I hope so. No, I think that is different. I think when you look at guys having their moments or their earning their pinstripes or whatever it is, just having that moment, whatever you call it, you got to have the fans there. You can't have that moment without the fans. That's weird. We crown the moment. Isn't that true? Don't the fans crown the moment?
So like, the moment
happens, the moment happens, but the goddamn fans are crowning that moment. If you don't have fans in the stands, it doesn't hit.
But can you earn your pinstripes or have your signature Yankees moment if it's on the road in the playoffs?
I guess that's I see where you're going with that. You could, for sure.
Jim Leritz had his
no doubt
signature Yankee moment on the road in Atlanta, game four, 1996,
and he shut those fans up. He shut them up. But there were fans,
so it can happen.
It can happen, I guess. I don't know. We haven't seen it, so maybe. When it happens, we'll identify that it's happened.
I'm trying to think of
I want that moment to be when people are in the stands. Like we deserve to be there for a moment like that.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think of other signature Yankee moments, and a lot of them are in October in front of the Yankee fan, like in front of Yankee fans. Like Didi Gregorius, like I know he's not with the Yankees anymore, but that wild card home run against the Twins.
Gooseys.
You just got
Gooseys? I did. I got him because
that's a signature Yankee moment right there.
Yeah. He hit both of them practically at us in the stand. So they were, you know, very personal moments too. And that's the thing. As fans, you get these intimate personal moments, whether it's, you know, whether you think it's between you and the player or you and the other 40,000 people around you. Like there's just a different feeling when you're in the building. So.
Well, so I was expecting Michael K to drop a signature Yankee moment on us after that win because he's done it in the regular season before. He did it for Giancarlo Stanton for a June walk-off home run against the Mariners in 2018.
It's hard to do that though when you're as a pitcher, I think, to like get that momentum for the excitement for an actual call to come out. You know, unless it's like a perfect game or even a no-hitter, I could see that, but for just like doing your job against the Orioles, that's tough.
Well, because I think
he's also not feeling the crowd. Like I can, as an announcer, that's also got to be a little tough to like get your momentum up, get your energy up with no crowd. Like that's strange. It's like dancing without music.
As far as Gerrit Cole is concerned, like that was his best start of the season and it was a big game for the Yankees, but I thought his biggest start, and he failed in this, was against Tampa 2 weeks ago against Tyler Glasnow in the first game of that 3-game series in which the Yankees needed to win if they wanted to still have a chance at the division, and it was 2-0 before we could blink an eye because G-Man Choi hit a home run.
G-Man, He-Man. Yeah, that's That's one of those moments you want back. It's one of those moments you want back, and that's really one of those that, you know, maybe there's a there's not as long of a slide if that guy comes out and beats Glasnow.
Right.
Who knows?
Even though sports had a break, your business didn't. You have to keep moving, and that makes hiring more important than ever. Indeed is here to help. Indeed.com is the number one job site in the world because Indeed gets you the best people fast. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need, you can pause your account at any time, and there's no long-term contracts. Plus, Indeed provides powerful tools to make your search that much easier, like sponsored jobs, which are shown to be 3.5 times more likely to result in a hire. With 73% of online job seekers visiting Indeed each month, Indeed is going to get you the important hire you need, just like they have for over 3 million businesses. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. And I've used this before to hire. Let me tell you, $75, you're probably going to get your candidate. You're going to get a ton of candidates with that amount of credit. Try Indeed out with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is their best offer available anywhere. Go right now, Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Offer valid through September 30th.
Did someone say playoffs? NBA and NHL are playing for the gold, and our partners at BetOnline have you covered. Get in on all the action, including a new NBA bracket contest with plenty of chances to win. MLB season is finally pushing into fall, and there's no shortage of ways to bet with hundreds of odds, futures, and props. So take advantage of return to sports, and remember, the casino never closes. Check it out all day and all night. Go to betonline.ag and use promo code BlueWire to receive your welcome bonus. That's betonline.ag, promo code BlueWire. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
Another guy that looked good over the weekend was Montgomery. And that was important because he had looked like poopy in his previous two starts. Speaking of poopy, we will talk about Aroldis Chapman. But Jordan Montgomery looked good.
Jordan Montgomery looked really good. This is the guy that we wanted to see. This is the guy that we kind of expected to see. So he's different. He's a different type of pitcher, obviously, than a guy like Gerrit Cole who establishes dominance on that fastball. Jordan Montgomery comes out and just, you know, he will go slow and curve and slow and curve. And now all of a sudden he's got potential 95, 96 to add to that. When his curveball is right, when his breaking stuff is right, because the changeup is in there as well. But when his breaking stuff is right, he's really hard to hit. He's got weird arm angles. He does have a different type of delivery that I think he gives you a different look. And this was exactly what we wanted to see. He pitched really well. And it was awesome because we just hadn't seen it yet from him. And I don't know how much of this has to do with his rehab being just weird and coming off of Tommy John and, you know, getting back into a groove. It takes time for these guys to find that feeling again, I think, you know, just find the whole body feeling, whatever, you know, landing a certain way and feeling a certain way, having your arm slot hit a certain way, the release hitting a certain way. There's just a lot of different feelings that you want as a pitcher to be under your control or to be able to be identified really well so that you can, you know, redo these mechanics over and over again and create that muscle memory. And I think that maybe he's getting to that point, who knows, but I'm not going to over dramatize one start, but he looked really good.
Yeah, and he was pulled in the sixth inning after the game was tied, but it wasn't even really his fault. Gardner set that inning up by allowing Alberto to reach second base on what would have been a single. And then if you look at the next three batters, I know you can't project what would happen based on, what is that called? The fallacy of the predetermined outcome or something?
Sure.
Michael Kay always has a term for it. But he got the next three guys to fly out. So it's like, if Gardner just fields that ball cleanly in left center field and holds him to a single,
nothing hurt.
We're talking about six shutout innings there. Instead, he ends up being pulled with 72 pitches. I get why he was pulled. They had a rested bullpen, Chad Green, Zach Britton, Aroldis Chapman. But at the same time, Montgomery was cruising and the one run he gave up wasn't even really his fault.
Yeah. No, It's getting very frustrating seeing guys pulled at 66.
But it's Jordan 72. Montgomery. It's not Garrett Cole. It's Jordan Montgomery. It's Masahiro Tanaka getting pulled.
But that's
what we're gonna get.
But that's the problem. That's a big problem when that becomes the counter argument. Every other name besides Garrett Cole. Literally, that's the every other name but Garrett Cole.
That's who your pitchers are.
That can't be. There needs to be a longer leash at some point. I don't care if you're bullpen.
It's a one-to-one game.
I understand that.
With a fully rested bullpen.
Okay, so let's put in the bullpen that's been really good, too, because that matters. Because hold on a second. Let me get a better opportunity.
You got to get your bullpen going at some point.
Let me get a better opportunity putting in these guys. So, you know.
They shut the door. They did.
Look, it worked. It worked. It's fine. You know, we're talking about this with positive things to say because it worked. If it didn't work, then, you know, we're killing him if that bullpen gives up the lead. And he's only throwing 72 pitches after being very, very good and looking almost unhittable. So it really depends on the outcome, to be very honest. I don't like their pulling him.
That's unfair because the way
people are talking about these things are definitely outcome dependent.
Yeah, well, those people are stupid because sometimes Boone can make the right decision and it just doesn't work out, and sometimes he can make the wrong decision.
And that's fine. We address that. We call that out when the moment is right. But here's my thing. This can't be a norm at 72 pitches. I'm sorry. I don't care if it's a tie game. At 72 pitches, you have to have some confidence. And there were, two outs with that? You know, get through the inning. There needs to be some confidence with the pitcher knowing that he can get out of an inning like that. Like, there's just none at this point. They don't even think they have the ability to do it anymore. So it's like they can't even...
Well, this season, certainly, they're not conditioned to do it. That's why Masahiro Tanaka is getting his tank empty at 66 pitches. Yeah.
Look, I know. This is more of a thing moving forward, but they got to get beyond this. They really do. They have to get past it.
I'm with you. It's not sustainable. And in an ideal world, you have Garrett Cole next season. You have Garrett Cole and Luis Severino who can pitch more than maybe some other guys. So you have 2 out of 5.
Yeah.
Aroldis Chapman had some Mother Nature call on the mound in the ninth inning, and apparently that's why he was acting weird and smiling after he got the final out. I don't know if he actually pooped himself or he had to poop or he sharted. I'm guessing a shart situation happened. I mean, we've all been there. I've been there. I've told a story on the podcast before.
Yeah, but
I was 13 years old in the Washington, D.C. airport.
We don't need to hear it again. I shit myself. Oh, I shit myself. Look, I don't think he shit himself. I know everybody's going there because it's funnier. And that's fine. If we want to go that way, like, I feel like it made Chapman more endearing. If he shits himself, he becomes more of a guy. He's more relatable, right? Like, I think if Chapman is out there and cannot control, he has all of these, you know, this guy is a massive human being, does, like,
you know why, boxing. Because he probably took too many supplements, too many protein too much supplements. Protein. He's doing all those squats. Protein gives you the shorts.
So fine, we could go with it that he shit himself. Yeah, that's fine.
Sharded. Not full poopy.
Yeah.
Shard.
Okay. Yeah.
I think it was a full poopy.
I just, when you're in a game pants. Like that, when you're in a moment like that, it's going to be really serious for it to happen because almost like your body shuts down when you're out doing things, right? Like your body, psychologically is no more. It's not like you see the bathroom and you're like, oh, there it is. I got to go. Because you know what happens with your body when the end is in sight. You're like, oh, I need to sprint to it because my body knows it's there. That's what happened to me when I was outside Yankee Stadium. I had to take a leak, but when the bathrooms were closed and locked, I'm like, well, my body's already decided what's happening. There's no other option at this point. Yeah, so they're laughing about it. They get like 15 guys out on the mound to make sure he's not hurt. He's like, I just got to take a dump. Can you guys hurry up, get back in there so I can go? Yeah, he had something chasing him.
I'm surprised this doesn't happen more often.
He had something chasing him.
Aren't you surprised this doesn't happen more often?
No. You have all this time to take a dump in the bathrooms. Go before you come in. No.
Maybe, but for starting pitchers, I would actually like to talk to a starting pitcher about this because he is in between innings. Sometimes you just got to take a shit, and sometimes you might not have the time to go. You might not want to go take a dump. If your team goes down 1-2-3, you got to get back out there.
Yeah, but as soon as you walk in that dugout from the previous inning, you better sprint and not fall with metal cleats because I could see that happening. don't do, especially for the Yankees this year. Who's surprised?
They got to have rubber mats.
Who is
down,
surprised
right?
that Aroldis Chapman didn't ice skate and pull a hammy on the way to taking a dump with his cleats on? That would have been a great one. That would have been a very 2020 remember, thing to happen.
Do you remember the Chan Ho Park diarrhea clip where he's asked after a game, like what was wrong? He goes, I had a lot of diarrhea. I had a lot of diarrhea. That's what I thought of with Chapman.
See, now if you're trying to control something like that, which is much harder to control.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Shit happens.
Have we got any analysis on to see if there was discoloration in the white Yankee uniform? I feel like that would have been, that's a bad uniform sure. to be wearing.
Exactly. I'm sure someone zoomed in on his butt. One other takeaway I had from this weekend, Jonathan Holder has skipped ahead of Adam Ottavino in the bullpen.
That's not hard to do.
No, but I'm just saying it's happened.
Okay, good. Ottavino's trash.
Good. Holder's been pitching good.
Ottavino's been trash. I mean, Luis Sessa should be ahead of Ottavino at this point.
Oh. Well, Loaisiga's coming back.
Loaisiga should be ahead of Ottavino at this point. I don't trust him as far as I can throw him.
So it goes Chapman, Britton, Green. Then who? Holder?
I mean, you know I'm a Luis Sessa guy.
Luis Sessa is
he's
not
a toolsy guy.
Up next. Luis Sessa is not up next.
If Jonathan Holder is right, I guess you could understand. You could see that. We've seen some really bad Jonathan Holder in the past year and a half. So, I've seen Luis Sessa be a better pitcher. So I don't really know how you're saying that with definitive.
I'm saying it with definitive. Before we get to eye test versus nerd test, have we seen the last pitch thrown in a Yankee uniform by James Paxton? Because he was shut down for a couple days after feeling sore from throwing on Wednesday. Boone said, I don't think he re-injured it or anything. I think he's just a little sore from the volume of throwing. But I mean, look at the schedule at this point. How the hell, he's 17 days left in the regular season. How the hell is he going to come back?
Yeah, I mean, we've definitely seen this with some of these rehab stints in the past where they have a little bit of soreness coming back. We're all like, oh, this is it. And then all of a sudden the guy's back like very fast. Stanton was one of them. I think that happened last year maybe when he got, we thought it was going to be a longer shelf and then all of a sudden he's back. So I'm not ready to say that yet. If that discomfort or the soreness doesn't go away, in a normal amount of time or subside, then yeah, he's probably done. Any setbacks at this point would be done for sure.
Exactly. And I thought he was only going to come back just to show that he can get back on a mound so Scott Boras can dupe somebody into paying him this offseason. But at this point, I don't see how it's possible. And you're certainly not going to throw him out there in the playoffs after he stunk already this season. And then he's coming back from injury. So yeah, I think it's it for James Paxton. I don't expect the Yankees to re-sign him because of the injury issue. So if that's it for Paxton, does Cashman take a loss on that trade? Justice Sheffield is pitching well.
You have to.
Justice Sheffield this season, I know he spent last season mostly in AAA and James Paxton was good for the Yankees last year. But right now, Justice Sheffield is a young 24-year-old pitcher for the Seattle Mariners, lefty. He's thrown 44 innings, has a 4.06 ERA and a 3.11 FIP. 3.11 FIP is very, very good.
When I see the two players, when I saw like what the potential was, even at the trade, I'm looking at it now, I still like the trade. I wasn't a believer in Justice Sheffield on the major leagues, in the major league level. And I still don't think he's going to have like a great career by any means. I think it's going to be very mediocre. But so I don't think they, I know he was the number one prospect at the time. I just personally, just looking at the player, I didn't think it was, going to be a successful run for him in the Yankee uniform anyway. So I think the upside was definitely with Paxton, in my opinion.
Well, especially the short-term upside to help winning a World Series was there with Paxton. And Cashman has tried to do this time after time after time. He has identified what this team needs is a young, controllable starting pitcher. I'm going to go out there and get it on the trade market. I'm going to go out there and trade for Michael Pineda. Oh, that didn't work. Oh, I'm going to go out there and trade for Nathan Eovaldi. Oh, no, that didn't work. Oh, I know. I'm going to go trade for Sonny Gray. Shit, that one didn't work out. Let me go get James Paxton. Oh, he got injured again? Weird. Oh, let's go all the way back. I'm going to go out there and get Javier Vazquez. Nope. He couldn't pitch in New York. How about Jeff Weaver? I'm going to go out and get Jeff Weaver. Nope, that one didn't work either. Every time he tries to do this, he fails. He fails. He has not been able to do this ever.
You know what's frustrating, though, is that when you look around, like, and how much of this can we put on Brian Cashman when you get down to brass tacks and look at the actual performance of players? Because
Because Sonny Gray's a great
pitcher now? Sonny Gray's executing like no other. You see, I was stalling to look at Michael Pineda's stats, and oh yeah, he's pitching to a 3.57 ERA. I'm just looking at.
And last year though,
I understand that. Like there's just it's irritating when you see a guy that is going out there and, you know, he's only thrown three games. I don't know how many innings, 17 innings. So it doesn't matter. He'll put his arms up and act like a car wash or a car sales.
I mean, didn't Pineda get busted for PEDs last year?
I don't know. He's been out of sight, out of mind. He was injured. I know that. The thing is, when you see guys that are successful outside of the organization, it's extremely frustrating. Guys that were supposed to come over and we thought we knew what they were or thought we knew what the potential was. Because you look back at that Pineda trade, that was a young, controllable guy that looked like he had top of the rotation stuff. And you gave up.
Well, he did. He showed it.
He had
certain times
top of the rotation stuff, but the ability to be that guy. And it just didn't work out. And I don't know, is that because of the player? Is that because of the way that the Yankees approached it? It has to do with the pitching coordinator? Like what? All of the above, probably. So is it necessarily on Cashman for talent evaluation?
Yeah.
Maybe, maybe not.
Pineda got busted for steroids last year. I was right.
All right.
But it's on Cashman and the organization for failing to identify who can and cannot pitch in New York. It's a thing. And Cashman has admitted it's a thing. Because after he traded away Sonny Gray, he was asked the question point blank, could he just not pitch in New York? And he didn't say, no, Sonny Gray couldn't pitch in New York. But he said it's something they discussed, that they acknowledge that it's real and that for whatever reason, pitching in New York is more difficult than pitching in Cincinnati or pitching in Minnesota or pitching
in... We talked to Oakland reporters about this and their beat reporters were saying like, yeah, it was a thing then. I can't believe they didn't ask any of us or talk to any of us because we would have told them, you know, what we thought of his demeanor post game. And he was having a hard time when Sonny Gray isn't going well, that's when the snowball effect happens because people will ask him about that and he gets very defensive and he doesn't know how to handle it. And then when you have like 30 people asking him about it with pointed questions, with, you know, I don't give an F tone in their voice, like New York reporters, then it becomes a different story than fluff in Cincinnati with your pitching coach that you have, like, you know, he has your binky.
So failing to identify talent, like it's not hard to identify Michael Pineda's talent or Sonny Gray's talent or James Paxton's talent. You can just look at their Fangraphs page and see.
Yeah, but you're right. No, that guy's pitching well. Because you're identifying talent together a package of other players who also either do or do not have talent for that player. And if you look at the people that they gave up, that Cashman gave up, he's a given up jack shit.
No, fine. But the players he's gotten haven't given them jack shit. So yes, we know Sonny Gray can pitch and has the ability to pitch. That wasn't something that only Brian Cashman found out. But he did not find out if Sonny Gray could pitch in New York. So, he didn't find out if James Paxton could pitch in New York.
So then how much of that...
Paxton has pitched well, but he didn't stay healthy. Like we said, when the Yankees traded for James Paxton, oh yeah, his numbers look pretty good, healthy, but he's never pitched more than 150 innings in a season.
Yes. No. And then the next conversation
was
like...
And then we're shocked when he's...
Then the next conversation was like, oh, injured? Well, you know, that's based on... That's right in line with how the Yankees treat their starting pitchers. That's perfect.
No, but like, so the guy can't stay on the field for a full season, and then we're surprised when he doesn't stay in the season on the field for a full season?
No, we're not.
That's
on
Cashman. I don't
think anybody's surprised about that. The problem with that also goes to the construction of the team and how they're relying way too heavily on the bullpen. They're like, oh, 150 pitches. Kind of know that. Like, there's going to be an opportunity where he's going to be on the shelf, and we're going to have to, you know, carry some of those starts. Good thing we invested in the bullpen. It's such a backward, back ass way of thinking and constructing a team. They're like, oh, we're going to be
because
innovative.
It's like, oh, let me get a damaged guy for cheap for less than I would normally pay for him. Right? If James Paxton was a durable starting pitcher, he wouldn't have gotten him.
So you have
for
to outweigh you weigh the risk with the reward, the value prop on who you're giving up, and all of these things that are going into consideration. If you as a team, you as an organization, didn't really believe in Justice Sheffield, which again I don't think they did, then I'm fine with playing the upside for that player because it was almost a 1-to-1. You're playing.
I am too. I'm not saying I would. I don't blame Cashman for making the trade, but when you look at his resume of pitchers he's tried to do this with, he's 0 for. He's batting 0.
J-Hap. And eventually J-Hap worked out midseason when on that first contract.
No. J-Hap is not in this category. What I'm talking about, the category of being a young pre-free agent pitcher.
Stealing youth from someone else.
Yes. He's not been able to do it. He's tried it and he's going to continue to try because it works. If you can,
he's done it on the offensive side.
It works. Okay. If you can get top end starting pitching for $3 million a year, guess what? That's beneficial to your team. That's not groundbreaking, but he has not been able to find the right player yet.
Well,
you got to call it out. You got to call it like it is. Eventually, you got to look at the scoreboard and see he is 0 for 1, 2, 3,
I agree.
4, 5,
I, no,
6,
look,
7.
I think a lot of this.
He's 0 for 7 of names I can just remember.
There are evaluations beyond talent. There's no doubt. I'm not giving him a pass by any means. I think there's also just more to the conversation. Be like, okay, well, he got the guy in the building who's got the talent. They understood, they identified that there was a problem with Sonny Gray. Why did, you know, and maybe there was a plan in place underneath him. At some point, that plan failed. The plan failed, or it just didn't work the way that they thought it was going to work because the reaction of the player didn't work. I don't know. There was a failure somewhere along those lines. You know, whether you're blaming Larry Rothschild or whoever you're blaming for the woes of Sonny Gray, or just literally because they didn't bring his Vanderbilt pitching coach in the building, maybe that was the answer. If you Sonny Gray comes in the building, you better goddamn well bring his babysitter, or he's not going to pitch well. Like, is that the answer? Because that's what
maybe,
it seems to be.
But that still deserves, whatever the reason is, you deserve criticism if it doesn't work out.
I like the attempts because he's not giving up anything.
No, he's not going to give up. He's going to keep doing this.
Yeah, good. Fine. I love potential and upside.
All right, I got a couple eye tests versus nerd tests before we finish. The first one is Brett Gardner done? The eye test says I think Brett Gardner is done, even though Aaron Boone continues to pencil him into the three spot in the order, which he did on Friday.
And what was
he's got? Well,
As soon as you tweeted that out,
he went 2 for 2 with a home run, a walk, but he did get caught stealing twice. So, but overall in the season, he's got an 88 WRC plus, which means he's 12% below league average, under 200 batting average, right around 300 on base percentage. I mean, look at his Statcast ranks. As far as exit velocity, hard hit percentage, expected weighted on base average, expecting batting average, expected slugging, barrel percentage, K percentage, they're all bad. It's all bad. And the thing that really is telling for me is Brett Gardner is negative on defense, -1 outs above average in 2020 for the first time ever in his career. I know, small sample alert. But use the eye test with Brett Gardner overall. He's not the same player, and he's not even the same player as he was last year. So
part of this eye test, nerd test, I gotta call this out. I feel like it's going in a direction that's not good for the nerds. Because it seems like every time we have a segment, eye test, nerd test, you can see the thing with the eyes, and then the nerds just backing it up. Like, okay, thanks, nerd. Thanks for the numbers. Thanks for the calculations. I already knew that.
Why is Boone continuing to play him and continuing and batting him third on certain days? Like the nerd test says the dude's done. He shouldn't.
So
even
maybe
be a
this
starter.
Is a good sign in the sense that they're not listening to the nerds as much in the offensive side of the ball beyond evaluating players like in game. Maybe it's not as important, which I kind of agree to. It shouldn't be because of the small sample size of things. This is
or
more
is
of a
it
loyalty.
Just, I need to break up the righties with a
this lefty. Well, it's that too, because that's a thing. But it's also Brett Gardner, like, oh, I trust him to work out of it. I trust you can hear Boone saying it. He's a veteran guy. I trust him to work out of it. He's gonna have good at bats. He's good for the team. All of these things. He's not going anywhere.
Someone tweeted me over the weekend. It was a really good, clever point. So the righty-lefty thing, we get mad when Brett Gardner bats third to break up the righties because it's asinine. Why would you want Brett Gardner up more than Gleyber Torres or more than Clint Frazier or more than some of these good right-handed hitters, right? So we say, well, if you're so analytically driven where it doesn't matter if a guy's righty or lefty, what are his stats say? Just bat those guys first. Like that's where we think that's where Brian Cashman is building this team. And then Aaron Boone puts out a lineup where he is righty-lefty focused, where Brett Gardner, even though he sucks, is batting lefty just because he's lefty. So the tweet said, like, okay, if you want to construct your lineup righty-lefty, how about go out and get a good left-handed hitter? Don't just bat a guy left-handed because he's Brett Gardner. Bat him because he's a good left-handed hitter.
So where's the breakdown there? That's kind of the point of Cashman doing the things he's supposed to do by getting the people there. And then all of a sudden, the guys who are managing said player or said lineup is now doing it differently.
But that's a problem. Yeah. You have to have...
What we're asking to do is that the manager just to manage based on what the GM has done. Every day.
Well, yes,
every
absolutely. Day. No, you manage day. Based on the roster you
every
get.
Every day. No, with nothing changing. Like, you just... that's those decisions are already made for you.
Well, I mean, obviously there's in-game decisions, but something like a lineup, when the Yankees are out there with three or four replacement players, you just literally look at the stats and say, who are my best hitters right now? I'm ordering them 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and then I'm putting all my shitty hitters at the bottom.
I guess.
That is not hard to do.
It's not going
to
happen, though, because there's going to be factors that determine what goes into a given lineup.
Oh, yeah. So, like, oh, we don't want a lefty coming in or a tough righty coming in. We want it to break it up. It doesn't matter. That tough righty's going to pitch to Brett Gardner. He's not scaring anyone right now.
Brett Gardner had a good game in that three spot. Love it.
He got thrown out twice stealing.
Well, you don't want... be fair, you don't want your number three hitter stealing bases.
Right. This goes into the second eye test versus nerd test, which is Clint Frazier's defense. And the eye test is that it's much improved, at least league average. You agree?
Oh, my God, yes. The comfort level, the eye test is telling me that that man is comfortable out in the field and has exercised his demons. Yes.
Nerd test backs that up.
Shocking.
Two outs above average.
Thanks, nerds.
Last year, he was minus 12 outs above average in 2019. And then as far as DRS goes, he's plus 3 in right field. He barely has played left field, which I find interesting and a little concerning. He's only really played right field. I get it. Aaron Judge is hurt. But does that mean when Aaron Judge returns, Clint Frazier's not going to play left field? Because he absolutely should be the starting left fielder when Aaron Judge returns. You agree?
Oh, there's no doubt. He's the starting left fielder. This is what we've been talking about. He's taking the job for next year. I mean, this was, you know, having the Brett Gardner test before this was a nice setup in the sense that you're looking at the guy who's taking his job. Like, this is what we thought. This is why you don't trade Clint Frazier right now, because there's a clearer opportunity for left field. And we talked about in the past, like, who is the other? Is it Talkman? Is there a battle between Talkman and Frazier? I think you and
Talkman's not playing well.
Early in the season, you were like, no, that's not a thing. It's not really between, maybe I'm confusing myself and we're saying it was between Talkman and Frazier and not between Gardner. Gardner's, for all intents and purposes, gone next year. Yeah, do we agree on that?
I agree.
Like, there's no way
they're not going to pick up his option. They're not going to pick up his option.
I just can't see it.
Especially with the way Clint Frazier has played. You're waiting for him to prove he can play good defense and hit. And he's done both
of
those things.
By the way, mature as a human being and a player. It seems like he's grown up. Like, this kid has grown up and grown up and grown up. And when you see that kid out
there. So what if they trade him, though? What if they trade him because his value is high?
It's dumb. It's dumb. Let's not trade a guy that's actually turning into a player.
Starting pitcher.
Let's not trade a guy who's turning into a player that we were hoping he'd turn into and could be mainstay in your lineup for 10 years.
I just figured out what's going to happen. Brett Gardner's going to have a final 2 weeks that are pretty solid. It's going to dupe the Yankees into bringing him back on his option. Brian Cashman's going to trade Clint Frazier for a young, controllable starting pitcher who's going to poop his pants for real, like Aroldis Chapman did. Because he can't pitch in the Bronx. That's what's going to happen.
It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen because I don't think Clint Frazier is going anywhere. I think Clint Frazier has actually really, really proven a lot to this organization. He identified that this was a pivotal year for him, whether he was on this team or not on this team. He just he had to figure it out. He had to get...
Could have been a career maker break.
I think it has been. He had to figure everything out. The off the field, the on the field, the defense, you know, consistent offense. Tweaking things, making, you know, having good Zoom calls, good Zoom etiquette. Yeah, that's probably been a very big positive for him as well. He doesn't have microphones in his face. He's controlling that part of it. So good for him, man. And no, you do not trade that man. You keep him on your roster and you plug him into left field every day.
He's got a 270 batting average, 383 on base percentage, which is fantastic, 14.4% walk rate, which is the highest of his career, and a 146 WRC plus. Those are all really good numbers. Couple that with the slightly above average defense, and you got yourself a player. I'm just curious why they have not given him any time in left field.
Yeah, I don't know. I think there's too many guys to stack over there. It seems like they're putting everybody and their brother over in left field as like the catch-all. So they wanted some consistency in right field while Aaron Judge was gone.
Maybe.
And giving him an opportunity to settle into a position, you know, whether it's, doesn't matter where it is necessarily, just to get that comfort level in the outfield, I think is a...
Get some confidence in the outfield.
It's a big deal for him. And then, yeah, yeah. You know, not...
Well, left field at Yankee Stadium is sure, more difficult than right field.
But just having the air of confidence to be able to go out into the field and play, you know, a confident defensive position, I think is big for him.
Yeah, and I'm going to be... Yankee fans are going to be mad. I'm going to be mad if when Judge returns, Clint Frazier's not starting left field every
day. I don't see how it's possible. I really don't.
I see how it's possible.
It's such a significant drop off, though, offensively and defensively after...
And defensively just, now.
Yeah, I mean, Gardner almost blew the game for us the other day with that little you know, flub of the ground ball.
Bobble. Yeah, so... It's been a really good year for Clint Frazier. I think he's maybe taken the biggest step forward out of anyone on this team.
Yeah, that's fair to say. I think he's done a really, really good job. It's not even a step forward. It's a 180. Defensively, it's a 180. And offensively, definitely. We all knew that, you know, what he could be. And then just in general, like his attitude towards the game, it seems like, you know, it's hard to say because we only see him in short times, but has changed.
All right, that's it for this episode. I know you guys sent in a couple mailbag questions, but we have run out of time, so we will do those next episode and continue to submit them. We can do more. Go to bronxpinstripes.com/podcast, or you can send them to the Twitter account at Yankees Podcast. Also suggest some eye tests versus nerd tests. Scott, any last words?
Yeah, let's take advantage of this day off. Nice little day off. Regroup, get the body going. Get ready for the 17-game stretch. The stretch run down into, you know, through Tampa or... Toronto, gotta get these Toronto or Buffalo, really. You know, gotta beat the Buffalo Blue Jays.
These games are at home though, right?
Yeah, I'm saying they're against the Buffalo. They are now the Buffalo Blue Jays. That's what we should be calling them.
I kind of like that though. They should keep the
Buffalo
that.
Blue
get
Jays
out of Toronto. Yeah,
I'm good with it. I'm good with it. But this is a big stretch. This is a young team. It's gonna be out hungry.
Good analysis.
Hungry. Must win situation. Gotta win these games.
You heard it here first, folks. The final 17 games of the season with the Yankees jockeying for playoff positioning is a big stretch. We'll talk to you on Thursday.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.